It was a convenient excuse. The lepers who lived in Israel were given clear instructions how they were to carry themselves when they were afflicted. And the rest of the community was forbidden to interact with them, lest they become contaminated themselves. They were excluded from worship and all other aspects of the social life of the community. What's more, it is clearly written in black and white in the law, as we hear in Leviticus this morning. A very convenient excuse. For example, to illustrate, I lived in Italy for 5 years when I was in the seminary. And because of this, I am told, I cannot donate blood at a Red Cross drive because I lived for a certain amount of time in a certain part of the world and somehow there was some contamination or possible contamination. Every once in a while, I'll go back and try to see if they'll take me and I get rejected. All right. But I'm not fond of being poked with needles. All right. So I now have a very convenient excuse not to participate in such drives, right? However, it also means that I cannot offer any assistance to the many people who could benefit from a blood bank. I simply throw up my hands and say, sorry, I was Italian for a little while. But for the people of Israel, it was even deeper than that. They simply excluded lepers and many other afflicted people on the basis of the law. And that exclusion then led to their ignoring of people. And then when they came around, it led to their irritation at their existence. They became those people. Do you know those people? Those people. We don't associate with those people. They were damaged. The law had rules. We need to follow the law. A very convenient excuse to exclude someone. However, what does that excuse lead to for us? What happens when we feel righteous or justified in our treatment of other people or our maltreatment of other people because of the law, because of our rules? Typically, when we feel righteous, it's more of an expression of self-righteousness. And that is not a good place to be in front of Jesus. Right? We have teachings about the human person. We have teachings about people who experience same-sex attraction. We have teachings about, we have laws about immigration, for example. We can use those things, those church teachings and those civic laws, to exclude people and even to hate them. And that's not why those laws, it's not why those teachings exist. Notice when Moses is proscribing the participation of lepers in the community, it really is a practical reason. It's to limit the amount of spread of the contamination of leprosy. And to keep them separate until they are healed, until they are cleansed, until God takes mercy on them and allows them to return to the community. It says nothing about hating them. It says nothing about you don't love them or that they're not a member of the people. And yet, over time, it had evolved into this active discrimination against those who are afflicted in many different ways. And then also the translation of that into moral superiority. That if you are afflicted with leprosy, if you are afflicted with some kind of damage, or you are different from everyone else, you're somehow less. You tell me that that's what God wanted. You tell me that that's what God intended in giving us the law. It says nothing about any of that stuff. The leper in the gospel knew the law. Painfully so. He knew that he could not enter a town, let alone a synagogue, to pray. He knew that he could not seek out a doctor or a healer in the community lest they too become unclean. You see how it's a never-ending cycle that begins to afflict these poor folks. What would he do? What could he do? Well, the law was not the only thing that this leper knew. He knew about Jesus. He knew at least that Jesus was someone who could possibly do something for him. He had heard of the man from Nazareth who made the cripples walk, who made the deaf hear, and who made the demons flee. This was certainly in the leper's mind when he was lucky enough to be in the vicinity of Jesus as he came to town. And because of that knowledge, the leper fell at Jesus' feet and prayed for healing. If you will it, you can make me clean. He doesn't even demand to be made clean. He is so humble and so tuned to the ability that Jesus has because of his faith. Now, Jesus, he could have walked away. Jesus could have protected those who were with him from contamination by leading them elsewhere. He could have. There was a convenient excuse to do so. However, that is not what Christ did. Rather, he did what the law forbade. He stretched out his hand and he touched him. He touched him, and the leper was made whole. Rather than being contaminated, Jesus contaminated him with his life, gave him wholeness. Not only now did the man know Jesus as someone who could help him, someone who could make his life more comfortable, now he knew Jesus. He knew the man. He knew the person. He knew his compassion and his love. He knew that standing in front of him was the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And his life was changed. He was free. He was free from the leprosy, yeah, of course. But he was also free from sin, free from fear, free from the domination of slavery to the law and to death. He was even felt free to not even listen to what Jesus told him when he said, "Don't say anything about this." He was so excited. His life was so transformed that he just missed that little detail about keeping his mouth shut. Would that we were so disobedient, right? Friends, this is what we seek. This is what we are looking for. Yes, we know a lot about Jesus, I would hope. We know the general vicinity of where he lived and walked and worked. We know many of the things that he said and many of the stories that he told and the deeds that he did. We know that he died on a cross and rose again. We know stuff. We know that we can turn to him when we're in need, when we're suffering, when we're confused and broken. We often do turn to him in prayer in such difficult times. However, do we really know Jesus? Do we know him personally? This is not the same as knowing things about Jesus. Christ invites us to friendship with him. And we often treat him as if he is a distributor of services. Give me this, Lord. Give me that. I know I can go to you and get it, but then don't follow me around afterwards. That's not the kind of relationship the Lord wants with us. Jesus doesn't just want to be first in our lives. He wants to be everything. Everything. And in permeate every decision we make, every encounter we have, Jesus wants to be there and be part of it. He seeks us out because he loves us and he knows the life that he offers us will bring us great joy. Therefore, we ought to find every way we can to come to him and to know him. to know His love and His compassion and His peace and joy. And then we are called to reflect that love and compassion and peace and joy in our lives, in everything that we do. Just as St. Paul tells us today, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do everything for the glory of God. There's nothing that you shouldn't do for the glory of God. Eating, drinking, shopping, of course, coming to Mass, correcting your children, honoring your parents, interacting at the bank or in the marketplace, watching the Super Bowl. Do everything for the glory of God. Not for your own self-righteousness, but for what God is and who God is. This week, in our six-week journey through the book study of Rebuilt Faith, we're invited to get to know Jesus. That's the theme of this week, getting to know Jesus. See what happens for the leper when he does just that? This is the same joy and life that Jesus wants to share with you. In this way, we will learn from him and then be able to be imitators of him.